This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
From the ArmeniaProud.com studios,
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on lineupmedia.fm.
Genatsit, genatsit, pai, luis, inchpisik, my friends. Hey, Brian, our man Chris isn't here with us today.
Super busy, dude.
Super busy. A lot of meetings.
Lots of them.
Well, in any case, I still have you, and I'm not going wrong there.
Having
the producer here is a blessing, you might say.
Well, I am blessed to be here.
Yeah, good. Hey, folks, we've got a good show ahead, and, you know, we've got Jack Topolyan, we've got Anush, and we've got Andy. Andy's been, like I said, off the air there. I needed someone for music, so we got Andy now, too.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be outstanding. Say, folks, enjoy the show and just keep listening in. Next week, I'm not going to be around. I'm going to be in the Caribbean on a cruise ship. I hope the wife doesn't push me off the ship or anything like that, but I'm hanging in there with you guys. But next week, I think our guy Brian, he'll set some encore show up. I don't know which one we'll put up yet, so just enjoy, and I'm just taking 1 week off here.
Okay? I don't know what show I'm putting together either, but it'll be a great one either way.
Good. Hey, Brian, our guest this week, it's amazing.
Because, I'm excited.
Yeah, because Chris hooked me up with Jack, and the resume Jack's got, Jack Topolyan, and this guy's been in Argo. You remember that one?
Yeah,
with the Iran
great
thing.
Movie. Great movie.
Ben trying to get out of there, and Weeds. I watched every episode on Weeds. Ray Donovan, Transparent Bones, True Detective.
Wow.
Yeah. And we got him on right now. How you doing, Jack?
I'm doing great, Jono. How are you?
I am doing great, my man. It's good to have you on here. What's been going
on
with you?
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome.
Not much, man. I'm just having my cup of coffee and getting my day started. You know, it's one of those slow-moving days so far. But I'm glad to be on your show. Appreciate the shout-out, man.
Well, thank you very much. You know what? How does a guy like you start a day off? You get your coffee done, and then what do? Go to the studios and see what's been ringing and take it from there?
Well, you know, I usually get my day started by taking my my daughter to school. That's one of my favorite things to do in the morning. I drop her off. Sometimes I hit the gym. Sometimes I, you know, and I have a home office. You know, if I'm not filming, I have a lot going on, you know, because I also write. I produce other things and, you know, just get on the phone and email with people and seeing what's going on, you know, connecting, setting up meetings and things of that nature. So it's an ongoing process, you know. It's like any other business. You just got to keep working at it, and, you know, things start to happen.
So you were 10 when you left from Armenia to the States, right?
Yeah, I was 10 years old when my family and I came over from Yerevan, Armenia, and we settled in San Francisco, in the San Francisco Bay Area, when we came to the States.
And you grew up in thinking that, you know, hey, I like to do theater. I mean, that's what I like to do. And then you had your big break. Did they give you a call, or how did you go about that?
You know, I've always liked the arts, you know, movie, music, film, theater, you know, those kinds of things. And I actually played music professionally. I played in a couple of rock bands in my high school and early college years, and then I had an Armenian band. We used to do a lot of these barahanteses and weddings and so forth. So I was always involved with the arts. But the acting bug didn't really catch on until my early 40s, and I was taking my kids to a couple of auditions and stuff because they showed they said, "Dad, we want to be like in commercials and stuff." Anyway, every audition I would take them to, all these casting directors would be asking me, "Hey, are you in industry?" So after a while, I started to take it seriously and got some real training in the Bay Area. I went to American Conservatory Theater. I enrolled and I studied and did some other things, and then decided, you know, if I want to be in this business, I'm going to move to Los Angeles where everything is pretty much happening. And, you know, came here, had an agent, started going out on auditions, and then these Armenians just out of nowhere just found out about me, and they said, "Hey, we got these Armenian soap operas that we're going to be shooting in L.A. We'd love to cast you to play a lead in one of them." So I started in one. I did like 65 episodes in one. And then they said, "Oh, you know, that one is ending. We got another one we want you to be in." So I went into that. And that was like 150 episodes. But then eventually I transitioned into the American market because that's where my my main focus and goal has always been, to be in the mainstream market. So.
So yeah. your first big break then, was it a TV series or a movie?
No, it was you mean in the mainstream market?
Yeah, mainstream.
Mainstream was a TV show. My first big break came as a TV show. And then I got booked on this Dustin Hoffman episodic called Luck, which was on HBO.
I love that one, man. I'm into horse racing. That was my favorite gig. I love that movie, that show. Jesus, why they take that?
Because there was a lot of controversy. A couple of things happened on set, but I was booked to be a pretty large guest star on season two. Then it got, you know, then the plug got pulled on it. But, you know, you move on. That's the way it works in the TV world. And then, you know, Rizzoli and Isles and Weeds and Ray Donovan, and then some other things started happening, you know. And I'm happy for it, man. You know, things happen in life for a reason, I guess, you know.
Right,
can't
right.
Sit back and dwell on the past too much.
No, that's definitely right. That's definitely right. Did they give you a call or did you have to audition for your first role?
No, you have to audition. You know, you go in and one of my first roles was to play this Armenian guy on Southland, and I'll never forget, man. I went in there, and there must have been like 50 guys in there just for this, you know, for this one role. And there were a couple of Armenian guys in there that I knew, but most of them were Odars, you know, non-Armenian.
Right.
Who were going for this role. And out of those guys, they picked me. You know, to play this guy, this character name, I think, Vahan or Vartan or something. And that was that, yeah. But you do have to go in there and audition for the producers and the casting director.
We had this one guest. He played in, it was called Homeland, I think.
Yeah, Homeland.
Yeah Homeland. Yeah. Oh, but actually, TZ on.
Yeah, he was on our show. He was on our show, and he said, "You know what? I get blown."
Yeah, he's actually a good friend of mine. Yeah,
excellent. He told me he got blown up at the end. Well, I said, "Are you dead?" He goes, "No, you know, I don't know if I'm dead yet or anything like that." But he did tell me that, you know what, Jono, it seems like they look at my face and everything, and all of a sudden they correlate that with like the Middle Eastern, the bad guy, the terrorist, and everything, and I get my roles like that. He goes, "I've been trying to change it, but that's the roles that they keep giving me."
Well, there's an old saying in the industry: 90% of casting is typecasting. You know, the first thing that any casting director sees is your physical attributes. You know, so
right.
What do you look like physically? So, for me personally, you know, I welcome those kinds of roles, but I play everything from, you know, I've played an imam, I've played a terrorist, I've played a Russian gangster to a Russian diplomat, I've played an Armenian gangster, I've played a priest, you know, so, you know, casting directors look at you and you have to kind of at first fit the mold of the character right. that's on the page. So whatever they're trying to cast. The second and most important part is you have to be able to, you know, deliver the lines, and you have to be believable that you can be this Russian ambassador or this terrorist or this priest. So that's where the auditions come in to play. And, you know, like I said, 90% of it is typecasting, but there's an old line from Godfather too, you know, says this is the business that we have chosen. So
right.
You have
right.
to take everything that comes with it, you know.
That's for sure. Do you, before getting into a role, a mob or a big hitman or something like that, do you go back to any films out there and do you say, you know what, I'm going to watch this one? It'll give me a little bit of a good vibe to do what I got to do to play this role.
Yeah, I've been known to do that, certainly. You know, if I'm playing a particular character or they're looking for a particular accent.
What movie do you watch? What movie's out there that you say, wow, this is what I like to, this is what I want to be in this movie, so I got to watch a little bit. Like me, I love Goodfellas. And that was a one mobster movie that you've seen those guys, and you go, "Wow, this is as a mobster as you could get."
Yeah, definitely, that genre is the most appealing to me. You know, the crime genre, you know, the gangsters, you know, the cops, the all that, you know, the chase stuff. You know, these wise guys, whether they're Italian or Armenian or Russian, you know, I definitely love those types of films, you know, like Narcos on Netflix, or Ray Donovan, which I was a part of, or True Detective, or I've been watching this Italian series on Netflix. It's called Gomorra. It's based on the Naples mob. It's in Italian, but with subtitles.
I'm going to watch
based
it.
Based on a film. Oh, it is off the hook good.
Really?
It is unbelievably good. And you know, so with regards to your question, it really depends on what they're trying to cast me for. I mean, I usually can tap into my world experiences or people that I've known, you know, and you try to bring that reality. But if there isn't someone in your realm that you can relate to, you know, you go back and you do some research. So, you know, acting, most people think acting is just, hey, you got a few lines and you just say it and voila, there it is. But no, man, actors rarely get that much credit because there's a lot of research you got to do. There's a lot of emotional preparation you have to do for the roles. And believe me, you know, I recently just shot, I was part of the film, which is going to come out this year. Rob Reiner personally picked me to play a real-life character in a movie called Shock and Awe, which is going to be coming out in theaters this year. It stars Woody Harrelson, Jessica Biel.
You're kidding. Rob Reiner,
no,
man. That's
James
big
Marsden.
Time.
Rob Reiner personally picked me to play a guy named Ahmed Chalabi. And this guy Chalabi was the Iraqi vice prime minister, but he was instrumental in getting the Bush administration to go into Iraq, you know, because he said that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. So,
So
I remember this character, you know, from the news and all of that. But when I was, you know, auditioning for the role, you know, I had to go back and do additional research on
right.
him to make it as realistic as possible. So
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. You probably did some research on this guy to play the role. Man, Rob Reiner, he did Few Good Men, he did Misery. This guy's top notch.
He is one of the most brilliant directors that I've ever worked with. I mean, and he works super fast and he knows exactly what he wants.
Wow.
And
look,
you know, and
you,
he surrounds
that's,
himself
that's
with
big.
Great people, man. I was honored to be a part of that, man. I mean, it was a big, big honor for me.
Well, I think definitely, there will be some awards given to this movie if it's going to be a Rob Reiner, that's for sure. I mean, this guy only come out with first-class movies, and I guess we'll be looking for that. And you put yourself on the map with putting out a movie, too, called Betrayal. Tell us about a little bit about that. That came out in 2013.
2013, 2014, it was released. Yeah, Betrayal was a movie that I wrote, I co-wrote, and I directed, and I also starred in. It was something that I wanted to kind of launch my career with because, you know, it's always helpful to put your own stuff out there so people can see. And it's about an Armenian mobster in Los Angeles who's caught between his two worlds, you know, where on one side he's got this criminal life that he leads as a powerful gangster. On the other side, you know, he's a devoted family man.
Right.
That, you know, wants to protect his family at all costs. So that conflict is always, you know, it plays real well in life and in movies. And we've seen it in other characters like Tony Soprano. We've seen it in Walter White in Breaking Bad and various others. So the movie was shot in Los Angeles. It stars myself as well as Eric Roberts and other well-known American actors and some well-known Armenian actors. And to date, man, we've been very lucky. The movie has been distributed in over 25 countries. It's still selling. IMDb ranks Betrayal in the top 50 of mafia and gangster films of that time era, which is a pretty big honor because there's some big films in that, like Goodfellas and some other
That's
ones,
amazing.
Obviously.
That's amazing. And I'm assuming I'm assuming that the budget couldn't have been that much either, and to be in the top 50, that's saying something, pal.
No, the budget was a shoestring budget, and we had a great, you know, group of people and friends and everybody that just contributed to it, and I can't thank the people enough. You know, they've been supportive here in the community, you know, friends of mine who own businesses and let us use their locations and so forth. But yeah, it is a huge, huge honor to be considered or to be a part of that whole top 50 thing, man. I mean, I never actually thought of that I would ever get there. It was never one of my things, but we've lucked out, and the movie's gotten some great reviews. It's available, you know, on iTunes, Amazon Prime, ton of other places, you know, so if people want to check it out, it's called Betrayal, as you said, and I think they might like it.
Well, that's beautiful.
It tells a story that all ethnicities can relate to, you know.
I'll definitely check that out. And, you know, with Amazon, we're working with Amazon right now. They're one of our sponsors on the show. So it would be great for our fans to get on Amazon and check out the movie. Just buy it. Can they purchase it on DVD or anything?
They can buy the DVD. Yeah, they can buy DVD. They can, download it. Do live streaming.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, like I said, on iTunes. If people go to my website, which is jacktopolian.com, you know, it not only will they see a bunch of things, you know, reels and stuff or projects that I've been a part of, but they'll also have a ton of links that they can click onto, whether they want to purchase a DVD or they want to just watch it, like on Google Play or Vudu or whatever, you know, format they want to watch it in.
That's beautiful.
So, you know, my personal website has that, and they can check that out over there.
And my friends, that's Jack, like J-A-C-K, and the space there with a T-O-P-A-L-I-A-N. So check that out, Jack Topolian, and that is .com. So, all right. So you got what's your next project? You working on anything right now?
I got two projects that I've been developing for these past few months. One of them is a feature film called Cost of a Life, It's a detective noir story that takes place in Los Angeles about a girl who's murdered or commits suicide. It's unclear, and an ex-detective is dragged into her murder mystery, and slowly things start to uncover and unravel, and he realizes that there's a lot more to this, to wow. her death than most people realize. And it really, we really explored that, you know, that underworld life in Los Angeles mixed with, you know, poker houses and mixed martial arts. And there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of twists and turns. So that feature film, we've gotten some great reviews on, you know, as far as coverage. And I got a couple of good directors that want to direct it. So right now we're in a kind of a funding stage where, you know, we're trying to raise some funding for that. And yeah. We'll see if we can get that made. The other project.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Jack. Yeah. I was going to ask, why does the public, like me, get so entrenched with mob movies? We just love the hell out of them. I mean,
well, you know what it is? I think there's a sense of, first of all, most people are good people in life, you know, and they live a normal life. Normal in the sense you go to work, you take your kids to school, you come home, you have your dinner, that kind of thing. You know, so most of us never really get involved in that kind of life. So it's fascinating. Movies are an escape for us to be able to go places where we would not normally go. With criminal and mob type of films, I think there's a sense of justice. There's that unspoken, you know, unwritten rule of justice where these guys don't follow the laws of the land and they take matters into their own hands. And I'm sure some of our listeners have come across that in their life, you know, where they've been wanting to say, you know what, screw the system, I need to do this on my own, which most of us do not do, and for good reason we should not do. We should yeah. let the law do its thing. But the movie allows us to go there, you know, so it gives us a sense of
right.
satisfaction. When someone's been wrong, our hero in the film makes it right by, you know, crossing the line, if you will.
Right.
So it gives us that, you know, that good feel to it. I believe in telling stories that are not only morally good, but they also are very much character driven. You know, I don't want to make movies that are just senseless violence and things are just right. blowing up and stuff. There has to be a story most people can relate to.
I think you try to capture that tragic hero figure that what pushed him to that edge, what made him go that route, and when he does die, or if he even dies, you feel for it a little bit. That's
absolutely
yeah that's good.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like I said, you look at a character like Walter White in Breaking Bad. Here was a man who was diagnosed with cancer, had 6 months to live, and he had a pregnant wife and a child.
The kid wasn't in good shape. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, what's going to happen to them after I die? So, you know, he gets into the drug trade. Obviously we know the story, but the fact of the matter is it was always with good intentions. Now, obviously most people in the real world would never do that, but you know, it gives us a bit of an out, and you can relate to that character because as a father, as a husband, you know, he's trying to
right.
do the right thing for his family,
right.
which is always important, in my opinion. So
You're right.
And, my other project is called Family Honor, which is a spinoff of Betrayal. Spinoff in a sense, what I've done is I've taken the characters of Betrayal, and wherever the movie leaves off,
Interesting.
We are turning that into a TV episodic, which I think the timing of it is right. Essentially, it's about, you know, Vaz, this gangster, in Betrayal, and again, how he became to be this person. So we'll explore his backstory, how he was forced to be in this life, how he really doesn't want to be a criminal, and he's always trying to figure out a way to get out, but at the same time protect his family. So the struggles, you know, we get a chance to explore a lot of Armenian traditions, Armenian history, Armenian culture, but yet we're mixing it with a lot of the mainstream stuff that people all across the United States can watch and relate to, because, you know, we're not making it an ultra ethnic thing. It's just the fact that he's just a guy who just happens to be Armenian, you know, and we've been developing that. We have a pilot episode written, and we have some pretty good names of actors who have shown interest in being a part of it. So we'll see if we can get some traction on that.
Jack,
it'd be great, you know.
Let me ask you this too: as a man in your situation with these movies, do you ever ask yourself, "Man, maybe I could turn that into a series"? I mean, is there a battle inside of you? Maybe not a movie, maybe a TV series. You know, that there's a lot of these things out right now that could have been a movie, but they turned it into a TV series, and a very successful one at that.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do with Family Honor, which is taking Betrayal. And again, we could make Betrayal Part 2, because the way Betrayal finishes, it's certainly not, you know, when people see it, they'll understand that there is room for it to continue. But I decided that it's probably best if we turn it into a TV
series.
That's
excellent. I can't wait for that. So,
well,
basically,
you know, we would love the support of the community and, you know, people out there to make this a reality, because I think it could open up a lot of doors, not only for this particular show, but also for across the board, you know, where we're seeing a lot of, you know, ethnic comedies and dramas coming on board, you know, because we're a mixed society of cultures in the United States,
right?
And we all have stories. And I think the Armenians have been here a very, very long time, and we've been a part of the mold for a very long time. I mean, we're everywhere, from politics to business to even crime, unfortunately. But, you know,
you have that with every society. I mean, you can't base it all
on. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Wow, man. Rubbing Shoulders with Rob Reiner. Then you got series out. You got a movie out a couple years ago. I tell you what, we'd love to have you back on the show. Tell us how you're doing and everything. You feel free.
Love to be back. Yeah. I appreciate you having me this time, man. Yeah.
Well, no problem at all. Thank you. We're honored. And we will keep touch. And please let us know. And we'll have Brian, is there any way where we can have Betrayal on our site as well, and we could put that
absolutely
out to the public too.
Yeah, we can put a link to it and anything else that we need to do.
Perfect. All right, Jack, thank you so much, brother.
Jono, thank you. Best of luck and continued success, my friend, and thank you again for having me, and appreciate the time, man.
We would love to have you back on when this movie premieres too, the Rob Reiner movie. Can't wait for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, it's called Shock and Awe, and it's due out this year, and people will probably see it near the end of the year. It's going to be a pretty powerful movie, man.
Thank you so much, Jack. Thank you so much. That's Jack Topalyan. And folks, catch up with his movies that he's had in the past, and movies coming forward from this point on. It's going to be outrageously good. I can't wait for it, my man.
Thank you again, Jono.
All right. Take care, Jack.
Bye-bye.
Another great interview, Brian.
It was amazing.
Yep. Jack Topalyan, he brought it. I mean, the shows that he's been on, the movies, Argo, Weeds, Ray Donovan, Transparent, Bones, True Detective.
Yeah.
We got to definitely check him out.
I don't think I've seen half of those, so now I absolutely have to see them.
Of course. And I think our next segment, we're not done. We got Anush.
Yes.
Anush, are you out there?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
All right. Beautiful. Anush, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I am doing great. I did go to Herman, and I did buy some wine, and I'm sending it your way. I think it's in the mail right now from Stone Hill, so you'll definitely enjoy it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'll taste it. I'll give my notes, recommendations for the food. Maybe Madam can help me. and we can pair some of the wine with some of her dishes. So we'll make it interesting.
Definitely. You know, it still amazes me how you just hit that so fast. When I mentioned Herman, you go Stone Hill. I mean, do you know these by heart all across the nation or what?
For the preparation for my sommelier certification, which I passed the first level, I'm working on the second. You have to know so much, and wine is not just the beverage. There's everything. It's like history, topography, geography. It's like a whole big course of everything. So in United States, I have to read up through almost all the states produce wine, and then like their major producers, the ones that are older. And so I don't, at this moment, I don't retain all the information about every single producer in the U.S., but like some things, you know, will pop up. So it just, you know, when you said it just came up to me. So
Bravo, that's excellent. Yeah. You see, folks, I bring the best on the show. I bring the best people on the show. So what do you got going on, Anush? What's been going on? Have you done any wine tasting over the weekend? And what new wines are you going to introduce to our crowd?
I got two wines that I'd like to recommend for today. But also, you know, we have covered the topics on how to taste wine and how to pair it with the food. But we haven't actually talked about how the wine is made.
Oh, excellent.
You know, what type of grapes do we use for them? I occasionally people would ask me, like, can I go to a grocery store and buy the grapes and then just smoosh them and make into a wine? And the answer is no, for the following reasons. The table grapes, or the grapes that we buy in the grocery store, they're larger, they're seedless, they have thicker pulp, they have thin skin, and they have this ideal pop when you eat them. And they have less acidity and less sugar. But the wine grapes are cultivated for winemaking. They are called Vitis vinifera, and they also have some hybrids or native varietals, which actually the Stone Hill uses, mostly the Native American varietals. But they are also they're smaller, the wine grapes. They have thicker skin, a higher juice content, and higher sugars. And when you eat a grape wine, it just like oozes all the juice out, and then you have this thick, chewy skin and bitter seed.
Right.
And those things are very important for winemaking. The juice gives the liquid, the wine. The sugar content gives the alcohol, and what does the skin give? Pop quiz. It's the skin gives the color. To the wine. So the white wine is made from white-skinned grapes, or yellow or green. The red wine is made from red or black grapes. And the rosé is made out of... I'm quizzing you today.
You're quizzing me? I'm just listening.
Yeah. The red wine, the rosé is made also from a red or a dark, like a blackish... grapes.
I got to ask you this too. The grapes that you just mentioned, I have tasted wine grapes, and it seems like when you bite into it, you don't really bite into it. It almost like squeezes out the inside, and the shell stays intact. It's that small. Is that a different comparison? Like that? It even shows that whenever you're not even biting into it, whenever you take a little nibble on one, it like comes out on one side and the shell is always intact. Is that a sign of wine as well, grape wine?
Yeah, because the skins are very important, especially for the red wine. They are thick. They have all those colors, all the phenols, all the tannins, and so they stay in the whole process, which I will describe, and they give a lot of qualities for the red wine. And the inside, most probably, depending on when you try them, earlier in the stage, yeah, if you squeeze it, it just like you described, it's like, you know, burst and then the whole thing like green it's like pops out with the seeds inside.
Right.
But the longer it ripens, then it becomes softer and more watery inside, and the skin and the seeds inside from the green, they turn brown. And that's another indication that the grapes are ready for harvest.
Gotcha.
So the first and the crucial step is to identify when to harvest the grape. And it is important for a few reasons. We need to know what, the skins, the juice, the sugar, and the winemaker needs to decide, okay, I'm going to make this wine, which is going to be higher in alcohol, more concentrated on the fruit. So they will wait and measure the sugar levels to reach to a certain point. And if they decide to make a wine with a higher acidity, a little more sour, they will harvest the wine earlier. But then, of course, all that, assuming that the weather is completely cooperating and there's no, like, surprise rains or frost, then it becomes a whole different issue for the farmers scrambling to just harvest the whole thing.
I was just saying that seasons do play a big role in wine. So, I mean, if they have to harvest it, they have to harvest it then, too. I guess that plays a big role.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's so it can be so stressful for everyone. And I don't know, the first time I witnessed it, we were in North California, and we went to check the vineyard to see how the grapes were doing and etc. And the next day, the next few days was going to be a rain and possibly a frost. And so they were all making these decisions, and they had huge, huge vineyards if to harvest. And they had, it was just such a big stress. And I was sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, it just like, it takes so much sweat and tears to go into making this wine, because it sometimes can be unpredictable, the weather, but it's a challenge.
I guess when you hear a hybrid grape, what does that mean?
A hybrid grape is a cross of the Vitis vinifera and crossed with the native varietals. Okay. To make them more sustainable. Sustainable. Because this can be another subject. There are certain wine disease that can affect certain varietals, and at some point, this bug that was found in the Native American rootstocks has somehow traveled to Europe and almost wiped out the whole wine industry of France.
Holy cow!
And then Munson, along with other viticulturists, they came up. They found a solution, so they would graft the Vitis vinifera, the French varietals, to the Native American rootstock, so that the bug would not affect the vineyards.
Okay. Well, that explains that. So man can alter the grape as well.
Yeah. Well. There's crosses. There is. Yeah. In Armenia, there is this whole another bunch of grapes that were cultivated by the professor. His name was Ivazan, so he just cultivated a bunch of grapes that are, and he just was experimenting. So you can do that. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are
better, but
superior grapes, but I guess for the living conditions, for the place where they are growing, they might be suitable.
Yeah, so they just adjust to where they're living, and if that's the way of doing it, that's the way it's got to be done then.
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. Wow.
So,
you learn something new every day here, don't you, Brian?
Exactly. So then, let's see, where were we? So we figured out when we're picking the grapes, the sugars are there, the acid is there. They bring in the grapes to the winery. You measure them. and then they go through a destemmer and crusher, which is a machine that is used to separate the grapes from the stems, and then it's split open so that the juice starts flowing. And right after that, the juice is pumped into a big vessel to get ready for fermentation. Hmm. The fermentation is a chemical reaction that occurs naturally or by introduction of a yeast. And typically, most of the wineries, they use yeast to have a more controlled environment. But some wineries also and winemakers choose to go with like natural fermentation because there's wild yeast everywhere. It can live in the cellars, and they pretty much are familiar with how that fermentation is going to go.
And that's the result of the aging and that process on just basically just aging the wine to make it better, right?
This step is the primary step, the first step. The aging comes afterwards. It's after all those steps are completed. This is the grapes that become into an alcohol, basically. This is the step. So the yeast is, you know, just like they put in the yeast into the milk to convert to make it into a yogurt, the culture.
To bring
so
the,
this is the,
yeah, I got it.
So this is the juice. So this is the juice, and the yeast feeds on the sugar. So it eats it, and then it makes alcohol and releases the gas. And that can make the juice, the grape, very hot. And because of all the seeds and the skins, there can be a big cap that forms on the top. And we have to go and every few hours and punch it down. It's called punch downs. You have this either big stick or there's like a machine that, you know, you mix. You keep mixing the wine because if you don't, the temperature can reach to a point that the wine will get cooked. And then it's...
It starts going down because it's like boiling water then, right? Water keeps going down.
It will not have the flavor characteristics, and it will not have, you know, the profile, the color would be off, basically. So for that, also to avoid, like, you mix it. You keep mixing the wine. But if that's not enough, in the bigger wineries, they have these vessels that have the coolant around them. Or in the smaller containers, you just put blocks of ice wrapped and covered so they don't dilute the wine. So keep the temperature down. Once the fermentation goes for around 10 days to up to a month, then they are pressed. Then the juice is pressed through a press, which separates out the juice, like the wine, the young wine, from the seeds and the skin. And then they put it in the vats for aging or barrels for aging. And that can take from 10 months up to years, depending on what they choose.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is not a business to where you're overnight going to be rich. I mean, you have to take your time and have a lot of patience in doing this for the first batch. And then when you have the first batch, you can't sit on your first batch. You have to already be looking at another batch to age it to where it's got to be like a domino effect.
Exactly. It is hard work. The vineyard, when you plant a vineyard, the first harvest that you can make that can be produced, made into wine, is fifth year. So right there, unless you're buying grapes from someone else and starting winemaking from the first year, which a lot of people do, but if you just were relying on your own grapes, you would have to wait. You would have to plant it, invest it, plant it, and then wait 5 years.
Wow.
And then start your production. And then 5 years you produce, and then 1 year you age, up to a few years you age, and so that like puts you 7 years till you start selling your bottle of wine.
Wow. Every time, as you're telling me this, I just keep picturing Victoria's vineyard and all that, and I respect her even more knowing that it takes this much effort, this much work. And you know, I seen the facility, but I didn't know it takes about 5 to 6 years to get everything up and running with your own grapes. Wow.
Exactly.
That's a lot. So what wine do you have for us, for our people out there in the Armenian world to check out?
So today I have the two recommendations, a white and a red. For the white, I'm recommending an Albarino, and I talked about it last week as well. It's a white varietal, originally comes from Spain or Portugal, and it's become very popular. It's very bright. It's a very has aromatic qualities, very pleasing. And so today's pick is La Cana. It's from Rios Baixas, from Spain, 2015. From Portugal. And it's best with your seafood and cheese platter and other light appetizers. And also, Minasan and Young has the U.S. version of Albarino. So you can even buy both and then do blind tasting. And then for the red, I'll go with Chianti, which is the Sangiovese grape. There is, when buying Chianti, if you have the extra dollar to spend, go with Chianti Classico, because there's plain Chianti and there's Chianti Classico. It's better. So, and DOCG should have on the label around $25. This one that I particularly chose is Castello di Ama Chianti Classico 2014, but just go to the grocery store or a liquor store and just look for Chianti Classico. You won't go wrong with it. You'll enjoy it.
Now, will you have this up on your site as well? That if these are people are driving, they can't write it down. Will you have it on the site that they can?
I will put under the podcast. Under the link of the podcast in the comment section, I will put the wine with the prices and the sources where to buy, or just like I said, just to try the varietal, go and experiment as well, and then let me know how you liked it after you tasted it. But yes, I will have the names with the years and the prices in the comment section under the link on the Toast to Armenia.
And you know what, Anush, I keep forgetting, but not this time. I'm on the ball on this one this week, and that's the Armenian alphabet puzzle. Now, you've worked on this too. You've got it on Toast to Armenia. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Just briefly. So when I took a time off being in the wine industry and raising a family with my two boys, we are a little bit far from the Armenian community, so there's no schools in the area for my kids to go and learn the letters. And I was looking for this product, a puzzle, a wooden puzzle that they have in English and other languages, and I couldn't find one, so I wanted my kids to learn the letters, and I just said, okay, there's no a puzzle like that, so I need to make it, and I did.
It's beautiful, and you guys could find that definitely on a Toast to Armenia. We've got the puzzle there, and you know what? It's more or less, I would say, are Western Armenians such as me. I have two daughters, and it's for me as well. I mean, I forget my Armenian all the time, and this would be a great way of, just seeing the Armenian alphabet and making my wife's from Armenia, and I can ask her, well, how does this sound, or how does that sound? So it's ideal, from kids to adults, so you guys can't go wrong
kids
with that.
Adults.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah,
anything
playing with it.
Yeah, for sure. I'll play with it. I mean, Jesus, you could put like words together with this thing. So it's great stuff. It's great stuff. And what do you got this weekend, Anush? This coming weekend, anything?
This weekend, oh my goodness, I can't even think about it at the moment. There's so much. Oh, my son is starting his soccer, so we're all excited about that.
Starting what?
And soccer.
Oh, soccer. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I keep saying football because it's football, and my husband's like, that is not football.
Yeah, I played the other football too. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
So just family time.
I got to tell my people out there. This week, tomorrow, I head down to Florida, and I'm going on a cruise ship. So,
how fun.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
I have no idea. The wife's taking me to the Bahamas. I hope she doesn't throw me off the ship and have the sharks eat me. But we're headed down to the Caribbean area, and I'm kind of excited about it. First time, I was a little seasick. Second time, I adjusted. I think third time, I'll be pretty good to go. So
yeah, just take the there's pills, right, for being seasick.
I guess something that my wife's putting on behind my ear and a bracelet too. So I think I could hold it. I mean, Jesus, I'm Armenian. We could adjust to anything.
Yeah. Exactly. Have safe trip. Have fun.
Yeah. And you know what, Anush? They will have wine on the ship. Is there any wine that I should stay away from if I get seasick or something like that? Is there thicker wine, lighter wine, anything like that I should be aware of?
Well, first of all, be hydrated. Drink lots and lots of water. And if you are seasick, I think you should abstain from any alcohol.
Yeah.
Just have water. But yes, the lighter, of course, lighter with less alcohol would be better for those kind of places. Stay with white or lighter red. You can always ask for the alcohol content on the bottle. It always says it. And with lesser, with like 12% or 12, 13 would be for the reds, and maybe even 11 for the white.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely go with the lighter wine.
Okay, I will definitely do that. All right, Anush, well, you have a great week and weekend coming as well. That's why we're doing the show at Wednesday today. So anyway, you have a great weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week sometime.
You too.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.
And that was Anush.
Yep. Anush, I always love listening to her talk.
Always brings up wine. And you know what? I need to know about that wine on the ship.
Yeah.
You never know if I'll fall off the ship or anything.
Yeah.
I need to keep a low content on that.
I'm not a big wine guy, but she makes me want to drink wine.
I know. That's a fantastic thing there.
Yes.
Hey, Brian. You know, I've been flirting with this for the last 2-3 months now, maybe a little longer. I've been wanting to get a guy on our show that's all about the versatility of Armenian music.
I remember you talking about that.
Yeah. I mean, we got the patriotic music, we got the folk music, we got pop music. And what I'd like to do, I'd like to bring in someone that can give me all sides of that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had past guests, but they've all been on one facet of the side, you
in
know?
In one genre of
music.
Yeah,
exactly. So I kind of looked around, right?
Yeah.
And I found Andy Terzian, and Andy gives us a perspective of versatility in Armenian music, you might say.
Yeah.
I've been looking forward to that, and if some of you guys out there saying, oh, how'd you pick Andy or anything like that, well, Andy's part of bands, part of the music world out there in the Armenian world, and you know, I said, why not have him on board? I checked out his site. I messaged him, and he said, you know what? I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Let's get Andy on. Andy, how are you out there?
Hey, John, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
My friend, you're going to be on this show. We love stuff like this, and you know, I've been wanting to get the music aspect to it for a while now, and I think that you may be my guy. You may be my guy here on the Armenia crowd.
Sounds good.
So,
sounds good. I'm excited.
Yeah. How did you get involved in so much versatile music there, Andy? I noticed you're not just solely on one type of music. You like Armenian music, and you like the mix of Armenian music with other styles and all that. How did you get involved in all that?
I think the territory just comes with being a musician, and you kind of have to be versatile, I think. Initially, when I started playing, my parents took me to piano lessons, and as much as I loved playing the piano, I just hated doing rehearsals and recitals, and I couldn't do it. And one of my friends, who's actually the drummer of my current band, was playing the drums. And I was like, man, I want to play something cool like the drums. So started out drumming, and just, you know, through the years of playing in bands and hanging out with different musicians, you kind of pick up on different styles and you kind of find your niche and what you're good at. So I think, yeah, being versatile is pretty important as a musician in general. So
perfect. You know, I got the right man, didn't I, Brian?
Absolutely.
Yep.
You know, I love my fellow musicians. So
yeah, Brian's a drum player, so he's really into that as well. So what I'd like to do a part of this show now, what I'd like for you to give us, Andy, is a perspective on one music out there and possibly a band that's on the rise, a band in Armenia or L.A. or whatever. But I'd like to keep it in the Armenian content so everyone that checks out our show knows, hey, you know what, let's find this band, let's find this individual, and let's download or let's check out the music if he or she's coming into town.
Definitely, definitely. You know, I think the music industry has just changed so much, both from the live perspective, just from the live perspective in general. So in terms of bands here in LA, one band in particular that I've been kind of following who's absolutely just killing it, they're a solid two-piece band. Shant Sulayan is on the guitar, Anna Gavorkin is on the on the drums, and they have a band called Satellite City. They're an awesome band, absolutely killing it over here. So it's Satellite, spelled regularly, and then City spelled C-I-T-I.
C-I-T-I,
yeah.
Okay.
I believe it was last year, or it could have been 2 years ago, they did a great music video for the Armenian Genocide on one of their songs. They made a music video. It was, it's called Rock Bottom, so definitely check that out. I think their YouTube is also just youtube.com/ and then the name Satellite City.
Wait a minute. Brian just telling me that he's got it tuned up here. Are you ready?
Here we go.
Wow, man, he's amazing.
You guys are quick. All right.
Let's get this on here, Andy. Good.
I love that.
It has a lot of Irish flavor to it too.
Yeah, that was
amazing.
Yeah,
that was definitely one of my favorite songs that they have, and it's a cool Armenian segment in there that you guys just played. So it's definitely it's a great song.
Excellent. Way to go, Andy. Good. I tell you what, he's right on top of it.
I'm gonna have to check out more.
Yeah, definitely.
You said it was a two-piece band.
Two-piece band. I forgot to mention Anna's also singing. Shant Sulayan's on the guitar and Anna Gavorkin singing and playing drums. It's actually pretty awesome to see her do both at the same time.
Rocking out like the White Stripes.
Yeah, actually pretty much, yeah.
Excellent. Wow.
But they're better than the White Stripes in my opinion.
There you go. All right, Andy. Well, that's great. Yeah, we got the band called Satellite City, and the city is C-I-T-I, and they're from Los Angeles, and I'm sure you'll be running into a lot more bands for us too down the line. This is great. I love this segment. This is going to be a great segment.
It's going to be a great segment.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah. So, Andy, what do you got going? Are you playing any music for any band right now, or you got anything going on this weekend?
Yeah, actually, I have a band called Blackmore from here in LA as well. we just released an album a few months ago now, and we just got a new vocalist, so we're just working on some new stuff, you know, just trying to get back out there. Like I mentioned earlier, the scene's really changed a lot, and these days it almost feels like playing live isn't as big as it used to be. I remember like back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and obviously before that too, everybody would be at rock concerts, and there was a lot of, you know, push to go out and support local bands, but it's really changing right now, and I feel like it's mostly just based off of, you know, like YouTube or other social media outlets for people to, you know, check out bands. But going to shows, not as big as it used to be, unfortunately, at least here.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't know if that's where the money maker is, like the 80s and 90s. Now everyone's just trying to sell everything through their sites, basically, through downloads and all that. So, you know, it may cost a lot more just to get a band on the road than what it was before.
Exactly, exactly.
So, well, that's great. So you got anything playing this weekend, or you got to keep hacking away and making something happen with this band?
Yeah, of course. Just the usual, just jamming out. You know how it is.
Excellent, Andy. And I tell you what, man, is there a site that our Armenians could get on, your site? Maybe we can make a site for you, too, and you could definitely be one of our admins on our A Toast to Armenia. You can put stuff on there as well. You're more than welcome, man.
Sure, no problem, yeah. Sounds great to me.
All right, Yehbar, it's been great having you, and we'll catch up again, and maybe give us another band down the line of what's going on with the Armenian music.
Definitely. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on the show again, guys. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you, Yehbar. Take care, Andy.
All right, boys. Have a good one.
Hey, great addition.
Yeah, absolutely great addition. I love it. I'm looking. I want to get him on my show.
Yeah, I think he'd be great on your show, too.
I think he'd be great, too, yeah.
And that is lineupmedia.fm. We've got some great shows. And, Brian, your show is Follow the Sound.
Yeah.
Excellent. And Andy, I think, would be flattered to be on that show, too.
I'd love to have him on.
Yeah, that's great. And, folks, check out ArmeniaProud.com. If you go to ArmeniaProud.com, you got all these great episodes from the past. You may want to tune in next week because I'm not going to be around. And also, you got Amazon on your right-hand side. We've got the Armenian alphabet that Anush has got on Amazon. You could buy that. You could buy Jack's movie Betrayal on Amazon. And you know what? First hit our site, though, first. Go to ArmeniaProud.com, and then on your right-hand side, you got Amazon. Click on Amazon. You won't see us anymore, and we get a little love back from Amazon on anything you purchase. So definitely do that. It's a big plus to us. Keeps the lights on. So that's our show for this week, Brian. It's been
great
having
show.
You. We didn't even need Chris to help.
Didn't need him.
We don't need him. But, Brian, it was great. And you know what? I'll send you back some shells or something next week.
Yeah, definitely. Give me some shells. I like shells.
All right, my friends. Genatsa Kisher Party. We'll see you next week with an encore show. And I'll be back soon. You won't even miss me.
Tune in next week for another episode of A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. Find the show online at ArmeniaProud.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation at Facebook.com/ArmeniaProud or Twitter at ArmeniaProud. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.